persons listening to this show should experience varying degrees of euphoria and might radiate a warm glow of truth from their entire being. This phenomenon sometimes lasts hours after a typical brain massage. If you are listening with another lights on listener and they begin to glow, don't be concerned. This is a phenomenon normally associated with Pastor Scheidbach's patented brain massage technique and merely means the truth has set them free. Warning, Pastor Scheidbach is not politically correct, and even more shocking, he is a Christian who uses the word God and prays in Jesus' name in public. Stand by. The Brain Massage Show is about to blow your mind.
Hello, I'm Jerry Scheidbach, pastor at the Lighthouse and your brain masseur. Get ready for your brain massage. Now, you know the Dems are coming for you, baby. They want the disenfranchised GOP vote. In the reality war game we might call Capture the Flag that's going on right now, you know, where the Republicans hold on to the American flag representing America as founded, while the Dems are making a play to take the flag, to wrench it out of their hands, and to wave it over a transformed America. The Dems are charging our hill, and they're making a grab for the flag. All right, folks, it's time for your brain massage.
Truth served here, flavored with delectable wit, succulent sagacity, luscious logic, a gourmet meal for the mind.
My dear friends, the content of this particular show is so important to me. I felt like I really needed to cut a version of it specifically for my podcast audience. Let me explain. When I edit a show for the radio, sometimes one that's so chock full of content like this one is, gets cut down so tight that it runs so fast, it's almost hard to hear it. I mean, it just blows by so quickly. But that's just a problem I have with the time limitations and the radio format. But this one was so important, I really believed and felt compelled to go ahead and recut it and give you the full version of the entire show. So that's what you've got here. So here's a question for you. Is Trump pushing the Dems to the right? I mean, after a day or two of nary a U.S. flag in sight at the Democrat convention, or maybe it was just hard to find one, behind and buried among all the, well, the North Korean flags and the Soviet flags and the Mexican flags, all displayed and waving proudly in their marches to the DNC convention. What happened? Suddenly, we have chants of USA, USA, and American flags showing up at the Democrat convention. At a Democrat convention, the American flag. Go figure. Friend, it's an open secret that Hillary and the Dems think they see an opportunity to pick up votes from those God and gun-clinging patriots that despise Trump. What has transformed the Democrat Party? Remember back in 2012 how the delegates to the Democrat convention then were almost perfectly divided between those in favor of including a mention of God in their platform and recognizing Jerusalem as the legitimate capital of Israel, and those who oppose these changes to the Democrat platform. You don't remember? You do remember. You remember that. Yeah, that was quite the spectacle, wasn't it? And of course, the first question is, why would any political party in America need to amend their platform to include a mention of God? Or for that matter, to recognize Jerusalem as the legitimate capital of Israel? I'll never forget that spectacle. The Dim moderator was flummoxed and tried, I think it was three times, to help the crowd understand what the Democratic Communist Politburo wanted them to do. By the way, I understand the idea to amend the party platform came from Mr. America is no longer a Christian nation, Obama. No doubt to offer a bone to chew by the God and gun-clinging Democrat dogs he insulted coming into that election year. But who nevertheless hang on to the fringes of their party. So Obama wanted them to include a mention of God in the platform and recognize Jerusalem as the legitimate capital of Israel. Well, after all, it was an election year, and you have to understand, as Obama does, that in a national election, the general public still leans a bit to the right on these points at least, and after all, everyone knows a party platform has limited influence on the candidate's policies, right? I mean, for example, the GOP platform has for many years included a pro-life plank, you know, and one that specifically recognizes the human life of the child in the womb has inalienable rights to life that were endowed to them by their creator, whether or not the child's biological father was a rapist or incestuous. Since, according to the Bible, God does not punish the child for the sins of the father, Ezekiel 18:20. And yet, the GOP routinely puts forth candidates whose position and policies are not in accord with that platform statement. You know, like when the geniuses in the California Republican Party put a pro-abortion and abortion paid for by taxes Meg Whitman up for governor in our state. And, as in the present case, by the way, you've got Trump, who rejects the idea, really, that the baby in the womb is a human being with the inalienable right to life. I mean, it's either that, or he believes it's okay to murder a child conceived by an act of rape or incest, so long as you do it while the baby is helpless in the womb with no one to defend him or her. Anyway, the point is that the Democrat Party is not known as the God and country American flag-waving party. That's been a GOP thing. So what's going on? According to Rush, progressive political pundits featured in the mainstream media, or mostly stupid media, or Marxist, anyway, noticed how like the GOP the Dems are sounding and looking these days. Did you catch the MSM commentary on the last night of the Dem convention? I missed it, actually, but I caught El Rushbo for a few minutes when he was airing some of the sound bites of a few progressive pundits describing the third and fourth nights of the Democratic convention as the best GOP convention they'd ever seen. Yeah, I looked everywhere for those sound bites, by the way. I couldn't find them. I guess maybe they've scrubbed them from the internet. But this from Vox, that's V-O-X, quote, "Democrats have stolen the GOP's best rhetoric and Republicans have noticed," end quote. Rich Lowry, editor of the National Review, put together an impressive list of moments when speakers at the DNC convention grabbed lines and hijacked issues from past GOP conventions. For example, American exceptionalism. You know, as we know, well, that's been owned by the GOP until lately. In this Democrat convention, the liar that transforms himself into an angel of light is taking advantage of the pessimistic and dark picture of America projected by Trump to take up a Reagan-esque, upbeat, positive outlook for America. Their answer to Trump's Make America Great Again is that it's already great, and Hillary even went so far as to plagiarize a line from de Tocqueville. Imagine that. Quote, "America is great because America is good," end quote. I'm just kidding about the plagiarism, sort of. I mean, a case could be made, since she failed to acknowledge that this line has been attributed to Tocqueville for about a century. Now, that's 100 years for those of you who were taught that 2 plus 2 equals 5. But we noticed that the Dems were talking about American exceptionalism and greatness. I mean, they even picked up Reagan's Shining City on a Hill, which Reagan borrowed from John Winthrop's famous 1630 sermon, A Model of Christian Charity. Or maybe Reagan picked it up from an earlier source. Perhaps he went right to the original, the Sermon on the Mount by Jesus Christ, Matthew 5-7. But imagine Democrats quoting Reagan. And when did the Democrats get interested in our founding documents? I mean, it took their leader, you know, Mr. America is no longer a Christian nation, what, 5 years into his presidency, before he finally got that line in the Declaration of Independence right? You know the one I'm talking about. It goes like this. We are endowed by our Creator with certain inalienable rights. And he kept forgetting the key word in that sentence, the word Creator. This is the same guy who referred to our chief founding document, the Constitution, as deeply flawed. Well, you know, this is a very important point. So let me make certain that you know I am taking this statement well aware of its context. What he said was this: the Constitution is a flawed document because it reflected the culture of the day which accepted slavery, the culture of the day in which it was written. By passing on the issue of slavery and accounting Africans brought here as slaves having no rights as citizens, therefore the Constitution is flawed. Well, granted to a point, but wait a minute here. The fact is, it laid down the foundation upon which the freedoms recognized in the Bill of Rights served to weed out of our culture the very injustices Obama thinks the Constitution failed to address. Listen, we led the way in all that, my friends. This is nonsense, and it infuriates me every time he brings this up. The issues he thinks the Constitution should have addressed are clearly addressed in the Bill of Rights. And indeed, the Bill of Rights served as the very foundation upon which the rights he says the Constitution did not address were ultimately addressed. And furthermore, this is something the founders understood would occur. In other words, the founders did address these injustices in the Constitution, which served as the legal foundation for the civil rights movement, something opposed by those Democrats, by the way. Listen, if Obama argues that the Constitution is flawed because it did not address the issue of slavery, well, he doesn't understand the Constitution at all or its history. I don't care about his Harvard Law School phony baloney expertise on the Constitution. He's stomping all over it, wiping his feet on it throughout his presidency. The fact is that everyone knows that every single one of the just liberties that have been won for the African Americans, or for women for that matter, or whatever, all of it has been won arguing from the statements of our Declaration of Independence and our Constitution with its Bill of Rights. You know, you really need to go see Dinesh's latest documentary, Hillary's America. And you'll find out that the Republicans have consistently been the party of freedom, while the Democrats have been, throughout their history, and I mean from the time Jefferson's party split into the Republicans and Democrats until today, the party of slavery. They still are, if the truth is known about the underbelly of that party. But the party of slavery, the party of Jim Crow, fiercely opposed by Republicans, by the way, the party of America is no longer a Christian nation, the party of abortion rights over human rights, of the baby in the womb, the party of gay rights over the rights of religious conscience, the party of government control over virtually every aspect of our lives and business, even using the courts to socially engineer our culture, attempting to reshape our values and beliefs in the image of Mao Zedong. Check out Hillary's new uniform. Looks like Chairman Mao. The party of removing God from the public square. The party that despises flag-waving Americans and praises flag-burning commies. That party suddenly gets religion. That party suddenly gets patriotic. That party that booed God in its last convention suddenly wants to talk about God and grab the flag and wave it proudly. What's happened? It used to be the GOP that hammered away at family values, patriotism, and American exceptionalism. I mean, we've got a senior House Republican listening to DNC speakers and saying, quote, we're supposed to be making that sort of speech. What? Trump is busy telling us that America is no longer great. America's on the brink. America's about to be hijacked by those who want to transform her into something other than what our founders envisioned. And he's right, by the way. Meanwhile, we sit here watching the Democrats hijack America's founded, trying to reinvent America in the image of European socialism, even communism. Here comes Chairman Mao, and they are clever devils, the type that can only be dealt with by prayer and fasting, by the way. See Matthew 17:21. Those who have ears to hear, let them hear. They are clever devils, and like their father, the father of lies, they transform themselves into angels of light. And now, since Obamatics have succeeded at bringing this nation to the maw of hell, Psalm 9:17, and our hope of restoring America to her founding principles is stretched thin today and near the snapping point, and we're sounding the alarm as loudly as we are able that the light that is shining from the city on the hill is not that light that comes from God, but rather it is that light Jesus spoke of when he said the light of the body is the eye, and if your eye is evil, then the light that is in you is darkness, Matthew 6:23. And he exclaimed that if the light that is in you is darkness, how great is that darkness? The devil's operating through the DNC to bring this darkness into America now see their opportunity and seize upon it. It's a war maneuver, my friend. You might call it Operation Capture the Flag. I played Capture the Flag as a kid. You know the game, but this is for real. Dems have traditionally been the party that despised flag-waving patriotism, wearing your patriotism on your sleeve, remember? Many have expressed open contempt for the flag. They've spit on our military coming home from the war, especially from Vietnam. They have been the party that ridicules passionate patriotism. And we've become accustomed to that, haven't we? But watch out for the day they decide the American flag is their flag, when they wave it proudly, when it represents the values they espouse, when they have succeeded in this game of capture the flag and have won. God forbid the day is coming when the socialists will have captured the flag. Rally, patriots. Rally around that flag. Don't let Obama and his army of America as founded, hating socialists and human secularists take the flag. After 3 days of the Democrat convention with hardly any mention of God, with hardly an American flag in sight, for the record, by the way, those who were saying there were no American flags at the DNC convention are incorrect. There was a virtual flag on the large jumbo screens on the stage, and they did bring in a physical flag for the Pledge of Allegiance, but there were no permanent flags posted on the stage. But you know, wait a minute now. Actually, that's not even true. It's even worse than that, because in fact, in preparations for the convention, there were physical flags posted on the platform, but they were removed the night before the first day of the convention, and I understand it was out of sensitivity to those who objected. But when this was noticed, well, they brought in the flags on the second day. But guess what other flags you could easily find at the DNC convention? No trouble finding them in the marches to the convention and in their activities at the convention. Yeah, no kidding. You saw communist North Korean flags waving. You saw the Palestinian flag waving. You saw the Soviet flag waving. You saw the Mexican flag waving, all displayed proudly. But until the devils realized how bad it looked to have all these flags waving without a prominent display of the American flag, you had to look hard to find a U.S. flag. There was a display that included the American flag in the Wells Fargo Center at the convention. And guess what? Some protesters broke through at the Wells Fargo Center and set on fire an American flag. One brave, patriotic lady attempted to put it out and got burned. And God bless her. But many noticed that in this convention, at least in the third and fourth days, the DNC was pushing faith and patriotism, God and country, at the Democrat Party convention. And at one time, the crowd actually chanted, USA, USA, US. Whoa, that's new. They're making a run at the flag, boys. Be alert. And the MSM are saying, hey, what's going on? We don't get God and country patriotism at the DNC. God talk, family values, American exceptionalism. That's GOP rhetoric. Remember in the last Dem convention, they literally booed God. Well, some might say that's taking it a bit far, but look, I watched that happen, and I'm telling you, that's not far off the mark at all. But this convention has been described by some as the best GOP convention they've ever seen. And ears that hear noted the demented cackles of devils behind their sinister smirks and snarks as progressive amused themselves at the irony. The DNC sounding like the GOP? They're grabbing for our flag, men. Michelle grabbed the flagpole at the family values section of that pole, attempting to rip that flag out of the moral code of Christianity and trying to plant it in the, quote, values of community and togetherness, end quote. In other words, they want to wave our flag over really what amounts to secular humanism, denying God, indeed, without God in the world, forfeiting our inheritance in the Commonwealth of Israel. Now, there's no time to explain that, but it's profound. Check out Ephesians 2:12 and come Sunday night for the Issachar Report. Tim Kaine, Hillary's vice presidential candidate for the Democrats, grabbed the flag at the, quote, religion and morality, end quote, section on Wednesday. He even quoted Jesus, or at least alluded to him, when he said, quote, we're all neighbors and we must love our neighbors as ourselves, end quote, Kaine said. Joe Biden grabbed the flagpole at the National Pride section. He said, quote, we have the finest fighting force in the world. Not only do we have the largest economy in the world, we have the strongest economy in the world. We have the most productive workers in the world. And given a fair shot, given a fair chance, Americans have never, ever, 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 ever let the country down. Never, end quote. Believe me, you heard nothing like that in 2012, when Obama and company spent their time hammering home the message that America could not possibly survive another 4 dismal years of Bush policies. It was all doom, despair, and agony on me, deep, dark depression, excessive misery. Remember? What has changed? When did Democrats become so effusive in their praise of our military or our economy? I'll tell you when. After 8 years of Obama destroying both. They're grabbing for our flag, boys. Rally round the flag. Bloomberg grabbed for the flagpole at the Getting the Business of America Done section. Attempting to wrest that part of the flag from the solid grip the GOP has had on it for decades. Bloomberg argues that he's a successful businessman, and so he can tell you what America needs is a problem solver and not a bomb thrower. Really? And they co-opted John McCain. After Trump dissed this war hero, the Dems have sidled up to him, simpering, and siding with him against mean bully Trump. And now, displaying open sympathy and admiration for America's war heroes? Well, this is the crowd that spat on our vets in the past and who consistently treat our vets with disdain today. And suddenly they're the party criticizing Trump for, in his own way, spitting on one of our heroes. Suddenly, it's the Dems that are the party of standing up for our vets while Trump is the creep for criticizing John McCain and even despising his time as a prisoner of war. Now, Democrat Rear Admiral Hudson says, quote, I used to vote in the same party as John McCain. Donald, you're not fit to polish John McCain's boots, end quote. Okay. And this is, by the way, the first, quote, Democrat convention in 15 years where Democrats have discussed the 9/11 attacks and honored their victims and the first responders, end quote. First time in 15 years. And according to this observer, they did so, quote, considerably more often than Republicans did, end quote. But of course, they still can't say ISIS, they can't bring that up, and they just can't bring themselves to say Islamic terrorists. They can't even use the word terrorist. Even Obama's speech was full of Republican-sounding themes, using quotes from Ronald Reagan and talking about the importance of our founding documents. What? They even praised the writing of the Declaration of Independence. What? They're coming at the flag, boys. They took their convention to Philadelphia to make a new declaration, to write a new constitution. They want to wave our flag over a new version of the declaration. You know, one perhaps that leaves out the word creator. And they want to wave our flag over a new constitution. One that is not merely a declaration of what the government cannot do to violate our inalienable God-given rights, but one that affirms what the government is responsible to do, which would be ridiculous. I can't go into that right now. I'll do it later. And at the top of their list, by the way, will be, no doubt, redistributing the wealth. The commies are coming. The commies are coming, my friend. Listen, Hillary even dresses like Chairman Mao. It's one thing when the Democrats despise the flag. That we have come to expect. But now they want to wave it. They're grabbing for the flag. They want to rip it out of the soil in which it is planted. Christian values, as traditionally understood, our founding principles of small, limited government, protecting the rights and liberties of all Americans, including those who disagree with their religion of political correctness, and supporting freedom as the first principle of liberty, understanding, as our founders did, that it is the truth that makes us free, and lies lead only to tyranny, and that a people without religion and morality cannot sustain liberty. Dems are grabbing for the flag to remove it from the base upon which it has stood these few hundred years and take it off that base and put it on another base, a different foundation, and wave it in triumph over the Christian constitutional conservatives who have till now waved it with humble and grateful hearts and cause it to represent something it has never meant before. They're coming for our flag. Hold on through the break. I'll be right back.
We Christians complain when our political leaders compromise their values, show contempt for the truth, and forsake the beliefs of our founders. Yet many Christians compromise their own values and beliefs to stay in churches that have forsaken their founders. The fact is, Christian, you are the light of the world and the salt of the earth. Haven't you noticed that every corruption we complain about in our government began in our churches? The answer is clear. Thus saith the Lord, stand ye in the ways and see, and ask for the old paths, where is the good way, and walk therein, and ye shall find rest for your souls. Jeremiah 6:16. Lighthouse Baptist Church has answered the call to return to the old paths. Will you? Join us this Sunday. Call 805-347-9887 or go to santamarialighthouse.org for more information. Lighthouse Baptist Church, 1310 West Bedarabia Road, Santa Maria. Go to santamarialighthouse.org. Satan is called the dragon and prince of the power of the air. The devil beware. Pastor Scheinbach is on the air, swinging the sword of truth at the dragons of deceit, thrusting the blade of incisive insight into the belly of liberal lies, lies that blind men's mind in darkness. He wants to know if you have his back. Go to www.thebrainmassageshow.com and make your donation today, or mail it to Post Office Box 2803, Santa Maria, California, 93457. Freely you have received, freely give. We don't charge for the Brain Massage Show, but that doesn't mean we don't have to pay to air them on the radio. Many have asked if they can help. Thank you. If you'd like to join them, go to www.thebrainmassageshow.com and make your donation today, or mail it to Post Office Box 2803, Santa Maria, California, 93457. Any amount is welcome. Stand by. The Brain Massage Show is about to blow your mind.
Hello and welcome back. I'm Jerry Scheinbach, pastor at the Lighthouse, your brain masseur, and Paul Revere's lantern lighter, lighting the lamps in the church belfry arch, singling the enemy is on the march, an enemy that would steal from us our liberties. I hope you're enjoying this extended version of this week's show. Let me explain. When I edit the show for the time restraints of radio, sometimes it causes a situation where it just gets so tight that it moves too fast and it's hard to grasp the content. And I was encouraged to repost this particular show in an extended format for my podcast audience. So here goes. How can Trump win the White House? Hillary has retaken her lead in the polls coming out of her convention, and she has plenty of ammo that she can use to discourage conservatives from voting for Trump and to win the Bernie supporters to her side. As I've said many times, the negatives of these two candidates essentially cancel one another out, but there's a factor here some didn't take into consideration. And that is this. I ask you, which side has any significant number of voters who actually care about morality anymore anyway? Now, think about that. Now, I've made no secret of my disdain for Trump. That whole scene at his acceptance speech with his name dramatically and boldly sprawled across the marquee over the platform. You know, very like him, by the way. Excessively self-aggrandizing. Way too banana republic dictator-esque for my taste. What would have impressed me would have been his theme, Make America Great. That'd have been awesome. Or USA, USA, USA across the top of the across the marquee. Or better yet, how about this? God bless America. Wouldn't that tweak the lefties? And then he throws out these statements like this one. Quote, I'm not going to let companies move to other countries, firing their employees along the way without consequences, end quote. Does he have a clue about the Constitution? He's ever read it? Maybe he went to one of Obama's classes on how to use the presidency to bully people into serving his own agenda. And this business about, I am your voice. I'll speak to that some more in a moment, but listen, that actually troubled me. You might have liked it. And then it was followed by that Trump cocky stare down his nose at the world. Reminds me of Obama. It reminds me, again, really, of some communist dictator. I've seen this over and over and over. And the day I'm inaugurated, law and order will be reinstated. Really? Okay. All right. I hope so. I just hope that includes the president operating under law and not as the law. Okay? Enough. I have my concerns about Trump, as you know. But I am very pleased with several things he said in his acceptance speech. So let's hold him to all of his suggestions, okay? And I must say, I did appreciate his tip of the hat to the evangelical community when he said, quote, at this moment, I would like to thank the evangelical community who have been so good to me and so supportive, end quote. And I think it was about here he interjected an ad lib saying he felt he did not really deserve it. Bravo. I'm glad he has enough humility to understand this. And this statement actually helped me see him a bit differently. But I just can't, it's hard to take something like this out of the context of everything else I've seen and heard from this man. I mean, look, either he is uncomfortable around true Christian people with Christian values and mores because he has no use for those mores and those values. He has no sense that his behavior has been immoral, but he knows that we disagree with his moral behavior, so he doesn't understand why so many of us would be willing to support him. Where's this coming from? Maybe it's because he knows he's a cad. And is perhaps somewhat surprised he's getting as much support from that community as he's getting. But could he be truly sensitive to his own moral failings and sensible that really he does not deserve the support he is getting from the evangelical community? I don't know what it is here. We'll have to wait and see. Sadly, for my part, I refuse to close my eyes. I'm afraid it's the former, but I hope it's the latter. Anyway, he went on speaking directly to the evangelical community. And he said, quote, you have so much to contribute to our politics, yet our laws prevent you from speaking your minds from your own pulpits. An amendment pushed by Lyndon Johnson many years ago threatens religious institutions with a loss of their tax-exempt status if they openly advocate their political views. I'm going to work very hard to repeal that language and protect free speech for all Americans. We can accomplish these great things and so much else. All we need to do is start believing in ourselves and in our country again. It's time to show the whole world that America is back, bigger and better and stronger than ever before, end quote. Okay. Now, I'll speak more to his reach out to the evangelicals in just a moment. But first, I want to comment on this last part of that segment. America is back, bigger and better and stronger than ever before. Hoorah. I noticed that the Dems are trying to spin the GOP convention as if it's wallowing in Trump's bleak view and message for America, or negative message for America. But you know what? That's really not true at all. Trump's assessment of Obama's America is accurate and therefore necessarily bleak. And they're saying Trump can't win by focusing on what's wrong with the country. So they're trumpeting what's right and so forth, you know. But wait, isn't that exactly how Obama won his first and really even his second bid for the presidency? Bush bashing? After his first election, he had to resurrect Bush again and start bashing him again to win the second time. All he did was negative, negative, negative. You know, other than his outlandish "the seas will recede" business, Obama's America is badder, badder, badder than Bush's ever was. Nevertheless, Trump consistently pointed us toward the future and what America can be again. But, of course, you know, only he can do it, right? No one else, only Trump. Unbelievable. That man better find out he needs God. Now, my friend, electing Trump will not be easy. And by itself, it will not do all that he has boasted. I mean, just like the seas did not recede the day Obama was inaugurated, okay? Although it must be admitted that Trump's claims are certainly more believable and more doable than Obama's were. But he's going to need to be held to account for his suggestions. And he will need a supportive Congress and Senate to get anything done. So we better watch those races and pay close attention to that. But first, of course, he has to win. How can he win? He's either going to have to reach out to a significant number of Republican voters that are still on the fence. You know, some of those who are described as conscience voters, something you'll understand by the time we're done here today, because I'm going to explain this category in a little bit. Or the gopers who are simply not going to surrender the power of their party apparatus to this ungentlemanly candidate. And still others among the GOP who are simply terrified that he smells too much of Mussolini's fascism. Now, it's that, or he's going to have to find enough Democrats to cross over, to betray, turn away from Hillary, and vote for him. Now, that means reaching out to them, showing them that he represents their values and their aspirations. And I don't know what that's going to look like. So to which group is he going to reach out? From his acceptance speech, it looks hopeful that he's inclined to reach out to the evangelical voter who might still be on the fence. Now, Hillary has a similar problem to Trump's. She and her party have alienated a considerable section of their voting base over the scandalous manner in which they have treated Bernie Sanders. So we'll have to see what happens. It's just that you look closer at this, most of those Bernie supporters were not originally Democrats. So Hillary is not necessarily losing so much of her base as you might think there. But my experience with these two political parties convinces me nonetheless that while there are hardheads on each side, it's true that conservatives tend to be more stubborn about their concerns than progressives traditionally do. Now, pragmatism is a disease afflicting both parties, to be sure. But means justifies the ends, and this business of circling the wagons to protect the party and falling on the sword for the party boss is like the way of the Democrat Party. Among Republicans, there are quite a few conservatives that are inclined to stick to principle no matter what. So, you see, Trump is not going to get Bernie's voters. It ain't happening. Hillary might not get them all either, for sure. But she'll get most of them, I think. Because in the end of the day, the progressives, say socialists, say communists, say humanists, secularists, are going to vote with the Democrat Party. My suggestion to Trump is, especially at this point, he had better go all in for the evangelical vote. And not as a mere political maneuver. No, Trump needs to kiss the sun, my friends. Now, those of you who attend the Issachar Report on Sunday nights have a pretty clear idea of what I mean. Remember, Psalm 2 says, quote, "Why do the heathen rage and the people imagine a vain thing? The kings of the earth set themselves and the rulers take counsel together against the Lord and against his anointed, saying, let us break their bands asunder and cast away their cords from us." And according to Acts 4, verse 25, this psalm is being fulfilled right now in our lifetime. And you see it. Surely you see it. The kings of the earth and the rulers, I mean, they go crazy when a genuine born-again spirit of Christ indwelt believer rises to power. They go frothing at the mouth, irrational, unreasonable, and inexplicably raging mad. They get crazy. But remember, my friend, it is God who removes kings, that's rulers, and sets up world rulers. Read Daniel 2:21. God has ordained that we, his people, appoint rulers according to his will. Hosea 8, verse 4. And his will is given clearly in Deuteronomy 17:14-17. And when we disobey, his own people disobey, he turns us over to oppressors. Read Isaiah 3. Trump needs to heed the advice that's given in Psalm 2 at verses 11 and 12. Kiss the sun, lest he be angry, and ye perish from the way when his wrath is kindled but a little. Look, since Jesus has declared all powers given unto me in heaven and on earth, Matthew 28:18, and so he is the ordaining authority over all divinely ordained powers. that are mentioned in Romans 13, 1 to 6. If Trump wants a real chance at winning, I mean, and actually doing something productive for this one nation under God, he had better heed the advice of the God of heaven and kiss the Son. Obviously, that means he needs to humble himself to God Almighty and acknowledge his Son as Lord, or in my opinion, he might as well kiss his hopes for the White House goodbye. He cannot win in November without a strong, enthusiastic God and country vote. Telling you, Trump had better have a come to Jesus moment and recognize to whom the kingdom actually ultimately belongs. He really does need to attract the evangelical voter, you know, that is still hanging out there in the margins of this election cycle. His decision to champion the IRS rule prohibiting clergymen from endorsing candidates is welcomed, but unfortunately, it's actually lame. I don't know who's advising this guy. First, because look, most evangelical clergymen, they don't care about this IRS rule. A few do, but most of them don't. Now, I don't style myself, by the way, as a clergyman. I identify with the old-time prophet. I don't mean prognosticator here, but the old-time preacher that preaches principle and does not engage in politics at all, by the way. Surprised? I'm sure you are. But the truth is, I don't do politics. I mean, understood as that game people play over acquiring power. I do principle, man. I do biblical precept and principle, and where that intersects with politics is usually where I'm reproving this old world for sin, righteousness, and judgment to come. But the fact is, most evangelical clergymen believe they have a moral obligation to avoid speaking to political issues. And second, they're too dedicated to serving their own belly. Their God is their belly, man. And they're too selfish to accept the consequences of speaking to divisive issues. They're a bunch of cowards who only too gratefully hide behind the myth that the IRS rule prohibits them from taking a stand on so-called political issues. Man, they don't want you blowing their cover. And that brings me to the second reason that this is really a non-starter. The second reason his effort to represent himself as our champion by going after this IRS rule is that, as a matter of fact, preachers are perfectly free to endorse candidates. Now, their church cannot endorse a candidate, but they can. The church cannot function as a super PAC for a particular candidate, and I'm not sure that's within the purview of the mission of the church, even though it certainly can engage on political issues that are of concern to them or that affect them. So really, it's a myth that current law prohibits churches from speaking to issues, even those considered by others to be political. And it's a myth that pastors are prohibited from endorsing candidates. Pastors have all the rights and privileges of any other citizen with regard to these things. So the fact is, most clergymen don't really care about the IRS restrictions against political involvement of their churches. What the evangelical voter does care about is protection from a trend that we see developing toward outlawing certain speech from our pulpits or in our letters or books or sermons and so on, our tracts, or speaking publicly about things that they deem to be politically incorrect. And we see Hillary as someone who will attempt to use the law to force us to change our message and even our beliefs, or make that effort. What we do care about is being forced under law to violate our conscience in the issues of abortion by being forced to support it with our tax dollars or to pay for it in our health insurance premiums, or being forced to violate our conscience in participating in homosexual marriages, or having their Christian wives and daughters forced to share restrooms with men who are confused about their gender identity and suffering such indignities as happened in Seattle when a man citing transgender laws got access to a woman's locker room, leering at little girls changing for swim practice, or that pervert in Virginia who dressed up in drag to gain access to a woman's restroom where he then proceeded to film women in their stalls, or the Los Angeles pervert who dressed in drag and used the new law to enter a Macy's department store bathroom and videotape women under the bathroom stalls. And on that point, by the way, we hear nothing from Trump. So he's our voice? Is he our voice? Our voice, the conservative candidate, is obviously uncomfortable mentioning God. I mean, he mentions it only once as an ad lib at the end of his speech. God bless you. And then look at it. It's only as a blessing, you know, like the Pope, to those supporting him admiringly. By the way, who admits he doesn't deserve the support of evangelicals? Why does he feel he doesn't deserve it? And leading the first GOP convention, where during the entire convention, it was almost silent about abortion. Just a few passing mentions And this business of forcing the homosexual lifestyle in our culture, not one word from Trump, not one word from anybody about that issue. So where's our voice in the Trump camp? But Trump did go out of his way to say that he would be a champion for the homosexuals against attacks like what happened in Orlando. I cheered with the rest of them. Only it does make his silence about being a champion for us and protecting our religious conscience rights something of a silent scream in the ears of our hearts. Where's our voice? Apparently it's not Trump. Folks, we're in trouble here. I mean, when we have an election cycle where God is mentioned more often in the Democrat convention than he was mentioned in the GOP convention, we're in trouble. In Hillary's acceptance speech, she mentioned God twice. Of course, it was scripted. I get phony. You know, I don't understand that. But I mean, even Obama mentioned God in his speech at the Democrat convention. Michelle mentioned God a couple of times. Trump did not add any mention of God to his speech. Now, again, I've mentioned that he offered a smiling God bless you with what appeared to be genuine effusions of love for his admiring fans. Okay. I hope it was an off-script, sincere reference contrasted to the scripted forced mentions of God at the DNC convention. Well, we can hope for that. My point is, Trump has a very difficult road ahead of him, and I hope you see that. He might win without going so far as kissing the sun, but if he does, it means we've been turned over to hell, I'll tell you that. He will certainly get, probably, most of the evangelical vote, whatever he does. Because, friend, I can assure you, evangelicals, most of them, are pragmatists. I mean, they're virtually secular humanists when it comes to politics, especially. You know, politics where philosophy meets reality, or where philosophy intersects with our daily lives. Evangelicals are very accustomed to voting contrary to their conscience. And they have embraced the idea of choosing between two evils for so long. Well, it's practically made Jesus' prayer that we be kept from evil of no practical effect. I mean, they hardly even flinch at it anymore. It used to be a big deal. It's not. It's got to the place where I'm sure evangelical Christians in this country, well, they would choose Mussolini over Hitler. Yeah, they would. They might even choose Hitler over Stalin and then excuse their compromises being, well, necessary. It's the only choice I had. I had to stop Stalin. And it's very difficult to argue with these rationalists. I mean, if you're presented with a choice between the slaughter of 6 million Jews and the slaughter of, what was it, 34 to 48 million, I believe is the estimate, of those killed in actions directly related to Stalin? Or how about Mao's 34 million? Well, then the choice seems clear, does it not? Go for Hitler, man. You got to stop Mao. Got to stop Stalin. You understand that if the devil is the one presenting your choices to you, then, well, hey, you see? So, you know, if there's no God and there's only evil, right? And there's no God, there's just only evil. Well, then you're left with only the choices the devil allows you to have. Just so you know, by the way, I'm not in that game. I believe there's always a choice for righteousness. There's always an opportunity to choose to do right based on biblical precept and biblical principle. But I want to be helpful here. So I don't think Trump or you who support him have a great problem in this area with your typical evangelical. And there are some hopeful signs. I mean, it's unheard of that a candidate would actually come from behind and then increase his lead over his opponent during his opponent's convention. I got to hand it to Trump there. It's unheard of. But that is what happened. Trump pulled ahead in national polls, actually increased his lead over Hillary during the Democratic convention. However, as you know very well, the Clinton political machine is very nimble. It's very able to adapt and change strategies very quickly. So it would be a mistake to count her out. Notice, for example, how quickly they switched gears and went all God and country in the last 2 days, and especially the last day of the convention. And voila, notice something here. She gets a bump in the polls, and now she's ahead of Trump again. God help us. And so that brings me to this. Trump needs all the support he can get. And the most readily available body of voters of any significant size are either the godless, secular, humanist Bernie voters or the conscience voter holdouts in the evangelical community. And he is right. He does not deserve their support. But I think it's a mistake for him to assume that their fear of Hillary is alone sufficient to rally them to him. I mean, not the conscience voter. The vote of the conscience voter belongs to their Lord Jesus Christ. And they will be loath to give it to a man that behaves like Trump has behaved. or welcome a first lady that posed nude at Trump's, you know, here them boyfriend's encouragement, who recently defended that photo shoot as artsy. You know, it's all fine. It's all very good. He said, passed it all that way. You gotta be kidding me, right? I know that for many, morality is simply a non-issue, but the conscience voter is going to be concerned about that kind of stuff. And please don't make me go over all the issues of concern to conscience voters. Please, not again. Just go back over my last 5 or 6 shows, or more, maybe. It's a long list. And Trumpets really never actually address the issues of concern that conscience voters have. Instead, they dismiss them as meaningless. And I can tell you, that's not going to bring them in. You have essentially pushed them out, and they're going to stand outside, and they're going to go ahead and vote their conscience and let you go ahead and provoke God to send this nation to hell with all the rest of the nations that have forgotten God before they'll join you and help you push it over the edge into hell. That's the way the conscience voter thinks. You see, you don't understand the perspective of faith on this, but I've tried. So anyway, let me tell you how Trump can win in November, how he can get the edge that would make a difference. I know exactly what he needs to do. He needs to genuinely come to Jesus. I know that's said scornfully and spitefully and really wickedly, but I'm telling it to you sincerely. That's exactly what he needs. He needs to humble himself under the mighty hand of God. He needs to kiss the Son, lest he be angry and end up delivering this nation to hell, according to Psalm 9:17, as he promised he would do for any nation that forgets God. Look, please listen. Daniel 2:21, and he changeth, talking about God, and he changeth the times and the seasons. He removeth kings and setteth up kings. He giveth wisdom unto the wise and knowledge to them that know understanding. That's who God is. And he's the one you're going to face for the decision you make in November. Don't miss my Issachar report on Sunday night at 6 p.m. at the Lighthouse. I have lit the lamps in the church belfry arch, and now you let me know you see that they are on. Call 1-888-770-8000 and leave a message for me in our listener response hotline. And you know what? I really want to hear from you. I mean, podcast listeners, radio audience listeners, you need to call me and let me know what you think about this. I need to hear from my audience on this. 1-888-770-8000. If you are calling from outside the country, or for those who prefer it, well, then you can email me by going to our website at thebrainmassageshow.com. Again, that's thebrainmassageshow.com. And when you call, please leave a message for me. Let me know what you're thinking about these things. God bless you. God save America. And I'll see you in church.
For a complete brain massage experience, go to www.thebrainmassageshow.com. The Brain Masseur is waiting to massage your brain with scintillating insights.